I'm Alex Michelson. Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. What a week. One of the most consequential weeks in recent American history. It started with the protests turned to riots, turned to peaceful protests. We've had the arrests of officers that killed George Floyd. We had his memorial service. It was a traumatic event. For me personally, as a local news anchor, I was on the air for multiple days in a row for 12 hours at a time. I've been working for 11 days straight. And in the middle of all of that, I got a call that the governor of California was in South LA and that I had a half hour to get there if I wanted to talk to him and I could represent the entire state as the pool reporter. So we did that. Our guest this week is Governor Gavin Newsom. I've been trying to get him for a while. We were supposed to talk to him last week. That fell through. So we're excited about that. We also have a conversation about race relations with two of our favorites, Areva Martin and Giano Caldwell, and later my commentary about this week. But we begin with the governor of the state of California, Gavin Newsom. I think part of what you're doing here is trying to listen to people in the community. What are you hearing? What are you learning?
No, I've had the privilege, spent the day in Sacramento just walking the streets and nothing organized with, deep humility in this moment to understand from real people how they're feeling, how they're coping, and what more we can do in real time to meet the sense of urgency that people demand. No one wants patience. People want intentionality. They want action. They don't want to hear the old state rhetoric, new task force being formed. They don't think they want to hear speeches from guys like me either. They want to know that we listen, they matter, we care, and we're going to meet this moment head on through consistency and constancy in terms of the institutional reforms that are necessary.
Speaking of action, something that's breaking during the time that we were doing this, we're hearing Amy Klobuchar saying that there's going to be more charges for those officers, the Derek Chauvin to second-degree murder, and additional charges for those other three officers. What's your reaction to that?
Long overdue. People need to see justice of all four officers, not just one officer. And that third-degree murder is someone that does a lot of criminal justice work. Just seemed inadequate to the moment. I mean, that was murder. We witnessed it with our own eyes. We're putting people away 15, 25 to life for murder. And so the idea of third-degree murder never sat well for any of us. And so I'm encouraged to hear that, the community be encouraged to hear that. But again, that's just episodic. What do we do in the next one? And until we foundationally and fundamentally address the issues of institutional apathy, disparities, and the need for institutional reform, then I really fear that we won't have learned the lesson of this moment, that this is so much bigger than the tragic death and loss of one individual. This is the cumulative neglect of decades, century in this country that needs to be addressed.
During your address this week, I tweeted out, "This is the cause of your life." I know you learned about this from the time you had a foster brother that was African American. Yeah. Your wife has made documentaries about this topic.
Yeah.
Why is this so personal for you? And what do you think is the most important thing that can be done to address it?
I think the most important thing is just to not play lip service to this moment. Is it demonstrably people have to know, they have to feel it in their bones that this time is different. Don't say something, do something, and prove to me that you can rebuild trust. And trust is about continuity. It's about consistency. It's about doing the right thing over and over and over and over again. And we have to re-earn trust. And that's foundational. We've lost trust with diverse communities, but notably the Black community in this country, in this nation. And it's not just criminal justice reform. That's profound. That's foundational. Let's stop the killing. Let's stop the deaths. But it's also systemic and getting serious about what lies underneath. The COVID exposed what lies underneath as it relates to disparities and deaths in the Black community and as it relates to testing and access to health care and educational opportunities and the like. But what is the foundational Marshall Plan in this frame that connects the dots federal, state, to local level so the application of these efforts is real and it's manifest?
But as governor of California, you have the ability to actually pass legislation to deal with this. Yeah. One suggestion has been the idea that the district attorney and the police have such a close relationship that there should be an independent agency that is in charge of that instead of having DAs having to charge cops. Yeah. What do you think about that? And would you like to
I've
see
been
that?
Supporting, I supported that as mayor. I was working with then Attorney General Kamala Harris. We had police-involved issues where we went to the state to do independent investigation. That's long been a cause that I support. So absolutely unequivocally, we support that frame. We worked with the Attorney General last year to allow more resources for more independent investigations as an option, but as a right, I'm all in and have been for years and years an advocate of this, including my time as mayor, when we utilize that independence as a way of building trust in the community and integrity in terms of the investigative process.
When you see that looting of this last week, what do you think is going on as a society? For the fact that as kids you're taught not to steal, thou shalt not steal, and yet there's so much desperation out there. Where do you think there's been a breakdown, and what do you think you can do as a leader of this state to try to fix that?
When you got nothing else to lose, what the hell do you have to lose? I mean, that's an expression of just our complete abject failure as a society to give people any semblance of hope that they matter and that their lives are worthy. We have a hierarchy in this country based on race. And we've had it for years and years, and we've allowed it to normalize, and we've allowed it to metastasize. And that's just being exposed, and it's just self-evident in all our laws and our rules, our culture, our history, things that are spoken and unspoken, going back generations. And until we break all of that, nothing changes. I was just rereading a book, Kennedy King, which is a book everyone should be reading. The exact same words that were being spoken then are being spoken here today. It's time for assurance, not time for patience. It's time to deal with institutional, and nothing fundamentally has changed in my entire lifetime.
Why is that, though?
Because we revert back to normalcy. We go back to our original form. Once you walk away, once the protesters walk back, we go back to the latest tweet, the latest crisis, and we're back in the situational mindset. And I hope that the twin pandemic of racism that's now reared its head, the foundational issues that brought us the disparities into the COVID crisis, depression era unemployment, if this is not a wake-up call, all these things stacked on top of each other in a moment to foundationally look within ourselves and fundamentally change our approach, then we're in real trouble as a nation, not just as a state and a city. And so I feel that deep resolve, but also deep humility, because one thing I know, just passing legislation doesn't change culture, doesn't change behavior all the time. And this state's passed some of the most progressive legislation in America on police use of force. No state has better laws in the state of California, but it doesn't translate all the time until we demand a cultural change bottom up.
I've interviewed a lot over the years. I've never interviewed you in a mask before.
No.
We're in the midst of this pandemic. You're here helping seniors that need help. What do you make of sort of how are we actually going to be able to pay for all of this? Because the destruction that we see on the streets for restaurant owners that were just about to reopen, how as a state can we actually afford this, and what are we going to have to cut because of everything that's happening?
No, I mean, that's exactly the right question. We're dealing with $54 billion shortfall. I've got to solve in 13 days, stacked on top of all the local cuts that have to go. In fact, at a time when people want historic investment into rebuilding their community and rebuilding lives, at a time now we're pulling back. That's why we need the federal government. What's the point of a federal government? 2 points: keep people safe and focus on social responsibility. And foundationally, we're failing on both fronts. So they have the opportunity, the responsibility to do more to meet this moment and help support communities large and small in terms of the federal stimulus that will allow us to make the kind of long-term investments and support the anchors of our communities. We're in it. Right here, small business.
But are you getting any indication that they're actually going to do that? Because the
yes.
Republican leadership is saying no, that the Democratic
plan
didn't
indication. I don't know how they can avoid it. I think there's certain realities that are bigger than their rhetoric and their own reticence. I think they have to do it. There's just the unemployment numbers are so much worse than people think. This is pre-protest. We're 25%+ already in California. These are depression-era numbers. We're living through experience that's worse than 68. We're living through an experience in terms of unemployment that's worse than the Great Depression. It's not a history books. This is the world we're living in.
Right.
If they don't wake up to that reality, forget partisanship. This is about being an American. This isn't charity. This is about being responsible. This is about the fundamental reason why the union exists.
Right.
And so I just have a little more optimism that they are going to do a lot more than it appears at the moment.
Meanwhile, you have been telling us month after month, stay at home, stay away from each other, social distance. You look at those protesters in the streets, everybody's clumped up against each other, many of them in masks, not all of them. Are you worried about a coronavirus second wave? How is the state going to handle that? And if there isn't an outbreak after this, what does it tell you about outdoor transmission?
Well, great questions, all the above. I'm worried we're not out of the first wave. Everybody's focused on a second wave. who said we were out of the first wave? I mean, the reality is, in California, we've had a steady increase of cases. We haven't seen the steady decrease in cases, quite the contrary. So for our state, we're still in that first wave. So of course I'm fearful of that. We were trying to very thoughtfully and methodically in a phased approach reopen businesses, and then of course try to avoid the mixing of households. And then of course this spark. It's understandable. You can't moralize that. You can't condemn that. You have to recognize and understand that. But it also reinforces our responsibility if we do see an increase in spread to address it in real time. And that's on all of us.
And last question. I was so moved the other day when you talked about your daughter showing you a TikTok video of the George Floyd death. What do you teach your kids at this moment? When you look them in the eyes, they're showing you that video. What do you say to your kids about what is happening in America right now?
It's what they're teaching us as adults. There's an innocence in your children. They haven't been taught to look at the world along the line, racist lines. They just don't. They fundamentally, my four-year-old doesn't see the world with any color. So they're just sitting there with innocence, just going, Daddy, wrong versus right. There's a clarity. There's a conviction. Protests, good. Someone smashing a window, bad. Police officers doing the right thing. When they saw, I'm not making this up, two of them were in last night, jumped on the couch, and they saw, wow, look at the police officers kneeling down with the protesters. They were shocked, and they were just so heartened by that image, the power of that image. And that taught me the power of imagery in the context of being expressive in that respect, that it's not what we say, it's what we're doing. And to see those images, it's a reminder of how important it is that we manifest more of a sense of peace and stability through the work that each of us does every single day, being here, being out in the community, police, community leaders coming together.
Governor Gavin Newsom, good to see you. Thank you for taking the
good
time.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you very thank much. You.
Up next, two of our most frequent guests reflect on what this week means to them and what's next for the movement.
And so right now it just feels good that everybody's been coming together within one.
I'm just so happy that it's so diverse. It's not just black people, but everybody.
What's happening now is you're seeing people not just talk about it, but be about it.
Voices of the people on the streets of California this week. This issue so personal to them and to our next guests. Areva Martin and Gianno Caldwell are our two most frequent panelists on this show, but they've never been on together. They join us now via Skype. Areva is a mother, an attorney, an activist, and an author. Her latest book is called Make It Rain, How to Use the Media to Revolutionize Your Business and Brand. Gianno is a former Republican staffer. He's a Fox News political analyst, and he's also an author. His book is called Taken for Granted, How Conservatism Can Win Back the Americans That Liberalism Failed. Gianno, Areva, welcome. Gianno, let's start with you. You went viral this week after you were in tears on Fox News after talking about what the George Floyd death meant to you. Why is this so personal for you?
I think it's personal for a lot of African Americans. One, because a lot of us have experienced racism. And in a number of cases, people have said that they've experienced either police brutality or discrimination in some form or another. And to have individuals try to discredit death by saying, oh, well, maybe he did something illegal or something like that is extraordinarily problematic. And for the first time, I think, in a number of years, folks feel heard. African Americans all over this country are beginning to feel heard. And we're seeing people of all races and backgrounds come together and unite against racism. And I think this is a moment in our country's history that we'll never forget. And I'm excited about it. However, I want to stress this one point. For those who tell their stories, it's important to tell the stories, tell how we got here, tell the history, the pain. Let's not wallow in it. We need to be focusing on solutions to prevent tragedies like this from happening again. We need to be talking about police accountability through legislation, working with local elected officials, the White House. We need to see systemic change in the system because there's obviously a need to fix what's been going on.
Areva, as a prominent African-American woman yourself, as the mother of African-American children, what did this week mean to you?
This was really a painful week for me, Elik, on so many levels. You're right, I am a mother. I'm a mother of a black son, and my son has autism. So when I think about what his encounters may be with the police, it's really scary. We often hear black parents talk about giving their black sons the talk. But when you have a son with a disability that may not be able to understand a command from a police, may not understand what the talk really means, it's even more terrifying. And then as a civil rights lawyer, I just feel like, Elik, I've been here so many times before, after Mike Brown, after Trayvon Martin, after Eric Garner, after Philando Castile, I can remember sitting on, programs like yours talking about what needs to change in this country to address police brutality, to address systemic racism. And I'm optimistic, but I'm cautiously optimistic because I feel like we've been at these points before. We get really close to these uncomfortable conversations about race. And rather than push through the pain, we tend to retreat, we pull back, and we don't make the kind of progress that we could make if we were willing to keep going. And I just hope this moment is that moment in history where we push through that pain and we have these uncomfortable conversations and we really do change the fabric of this country.
Giano, do you think it's different this time? And if you will, what do you think is your message as a black man for white America?
You know what? I do believe that it's different this time. I may be a little younger, but I've never seen anything like this. I've never seen, especially, in the business that we work in, on more conservative networks where people are uniting as well. This isn't simply an issue for black people. All of America is tuning in and recognizing that there's something that absolutely needs to be done. My consideration in this moment will be for African Americans, especially, is let's not just sit in this moment. Let's not just talk about the pain. I had a moment where I was on, I had 2 hours of FaceTime, not FaceTime lives, but Instagram lives, where I was with a radio show host from Chicago. And she was making a point to say, hey, I may not be fully supportive of the movement if I disagree with the looting and the rioting. And I'm like, that can't be true. But we ended up talking about it on Instagram for 2 hours and people tuned in. So let's move beyond what we've experienced in this moment. And let's talk about what real action looks like. And the difference is, though, I think in this moment is we don't have any black leaders that's the one particular leader, like you might have had like an Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson or anybody else that's unified around one particular solution or a group of solutions. It's kind of everyone speaking their thoughts, but we're not really getting there yet. And I think we need to be focusing on that measurement and what the vehicle is to solve these issues moving forward.
One thing, Ariba, that most activists want to see is a conviction in this case for the officers involved. As a civil rights attorney, how difficult is that going to be? How likely do you think it is that we actually see a conviction?
We know historically it's very difficult to convict police officers, even when their actions, their heinous actions, are caught on videotape. Police have a special place in the hearts and minds of Americans, and people see them as protectors and people who protect and serve. So when they sit on juries, it's very difficult to see them as criminals, even though they may be involved, as we saw in the George Floyd case, in criminal activity, clear criminal activity. We hope that that doesn't happen in this case. I'm elated to see that the charge against the main perpetrator who kneeled on Mr. Floyd's neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, that charge was elevated to second-degree murder. It carries a 40-year prison sentence, and I'm glad to see that those three other officers were charged with aiding and abetting. But one thing I want to say, yes, black people need to take advantage of this opportunity, but we can't do this alone. White people are in position of authority at the federal level, at most state house levels. So we need white people to move beyond these statements of we stand with the protesters. I'm getting a barrage of emails from big companies, Uber, Nordstrom's, saying they stand with the protesters. But there's something that they can do right now. All of these organizations that are standing with the protesters, they have an opportunity in their own organizations to make sure that they have policies that promote inclusion, that promote equality, that they are promoting African-American people into positions of authority within their own businesses, that they're fighting for living wages, for health care benefits. So it's a little disingenuous to say you stand with the protesters, Uber, but you won't pay a living wage for drivers, mostly African-American and Latinos, who can't support their families on the wages that you pay. So you need to do more than talk about standing with protesters. You need to be about the business of working to make the lives of those protesters better and to see a redistribution of the wealth so that people can have really realize what we call the American dream.
Well, up next, Riva and Gianna with more specifics on what's next for this movement and a reminder to check out our website, theissueisshow.com. You can check out past shows, including Gianna and Riva, and send us an email, theissueis@foxtv.com. We'll be right back.
The reason why we're marching all over the world is we were like George. We couldn't breathe, not because there was something wrong with our lungs, but you wouldn't take your knee off our neck.
The Reverend Al Sharpton delivering the eulogy for George Floyd this week during his Minneapolis memorial service. Back with our panel, Riva Martin and Gianna Caldwell. Riva, where does this movement go from here?
Well, I hope it does go to a place where we start to see the systemic change that the protesters across the world are really clamoring for and demanding. But I have to tell you, Alec, when you look at what President Trump said this morning, when he basically declared the problem solved because he got some relatively positive job numbers, that kind of statement from the president of the United States is the kind of statement that gives us pause and really causes us, I think, to reflect on, you know, does this administration, does the, you know, White House really get how deep and how troubling this problem of systemic racism is? So to stand there and say because job numbers are slightly higher than what economists had predicted for this month, that somehow those higher job numbers equates with solving our systemic racism, the issues that we have in this country, that's troubling to me. So I don't know if we can get there. We can't get Republican senators that control the Senate. If we can't get the White House, if we can't get those who are in positions of power to recognize how deep these problems are and that a job number that says unemployment is slightly less than what had been expected, that's not the answer to solving these systemic problems.
Gianna, where does the movement go from here?
You know what, and I understand Riva point, and I want to hit on something you asked in the last segment about speaking directly to white American. I think that comes with listening to the concerns, really hearing them out. And as I mentioned in the Instagram Live at Gianna Caldwell, people can check it out as we were having that internal dialogue as a community. Now, when we're talking about what can we do solution-wise, President Obama did something I thought was very important. He put together a blue ribbon commission on 21st century policing, which came with a number of ideas from different police groups, the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives, which I was the former spokesperson for, was one of those groups that provided some ideas. We're talking about police accountability fully. We're talking about training. We're talking about money, and especially when it comes to consent decrees, ensuring that these organizations, these police organizations, if they're not following the guidelines of what's put in place, that they would face the consequences of losing grants. Those are important steps and important initiatives. I do believe that we do have the ear of Republicans in the Senate, Republicans in the House, and in the White House as well. We saw what Bill Barr did just yesterday, announcing that the DOJ was going to do its work in the investigation once the state was finished with its work. And we know that AG Barr was involved after the Rodney King situation, and that's when consent decrees came about. That's how we got the DOJ to get involved in investigating. They've, since then, they've done over 70 investigations. But we need to do a whole lot more, and we need to see something on the table that we can all as a country agree on and move forward. Because as Riva said, we need all folks a part of this movement, not just to hear us, but to be active participants in the solution.
And last question, and sort of simply kind of yes or no, at the end of this week, Riva, are you more hopeful or less hopeful?
Ooh, that's a hard yes or no for a lawyer, Alec. I'm going to say I'm cautiously optimistic. So I'm cautiously hopeful, but, you know, again, Gianna saw Barr getting involved. I saw Barr tear gassing peaceful protesters. So, again, lots of reasons
to
pause.
The reporting suggested that that wasn't true. The Secret Service said that there was no tear gas.
Okay, well, that's semantics. It was gas. People's eyes were tearing up. They were torn off the steps so that the president could have a photo op with a Bible. That's true because we saw that with our very eyes. So those kinds of, you know, antics from the White House make me very concerned, Alex.
Gianna, are you more hopeful or less hopeful at the end of this week?
I wouldn't say more hopeful. I would say that I'm hopeful.
Okay. Well, thank you both for being here. And we got a little bit of contention there, but hopefully the message also that people are coming together. Up next, my thoughts on what should come next. And if you often watch our show, Gianna and Arriva both know this. We like to play music, but perhaps most powerful this week was the sounds of silence, the more than 8 minutes of silence for George Floyd. We go to break with silence as we remember him. At the end of this tumultuous week, I want to offer some thoughts on where this movement can go from here. Last week, I offered a commentary on Americans' need to listen to one another. In the days that immediately followed, that situation seemed to get worse. We were overwhelmed by images of desperate looting causing potentially years of economic hardship. But by week's end, those images started to fade, thanks to strong police work, the National Guard's presence, and citizens coming forward to say, enough. The focus turned to the millions of people peacefully protesting across our state and our country. What's remarkable about these demonstrations is their diversity. They look a lot like Dr. King's dream back in 1963, where all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, have come together in their outrage about a man's senseless murder at the hands of law enforcement and the hard realization that historically this type of thing is not an isolated incident. It's been especially moving to see the overwhelming majority of good cops stepping forward to speak out against bad cops. And all this political pressure is starting to work. All of the officers involved in George Floyd's killing have been charged, sending a message to cops everywhere that it's not okay to stand by and do nothing. Cities like Los Angeles and the state of California now starting to enact significant reforms. But activists say it's not enough. And long term, there is only one way to achieve real systemic change. And that's to vote. And not just vote for president, but vote for city attorneys, district attorneys, and attorneys general. Vote for judges and sheriffs and city council members and mayors. Vote for assembly members and senators and congressmen. Vote so people that you agree with can be in the room where it happens when the decisions are actually made. There's a lot of money supporting entrenched interest groups that are depending on the fact that you won't vote. They're waiting for you to move on, become distracted by the latest Twitter outrage or the thirst trap picture on Instagram or silly dance moves on TikTok and not vote. That's where they step in and they control the policy. But here's the reality. Many of them are not prepared to deal with. Young people are actually the majority. Millennials and the even younger Generation Z are the largest voting bloc in America if they voted. The problem is traditionally, they voted in the lowest numbers. The reality is now voting has literally never been easier. Between vote by mail, early voting, weekend voting, and the traditional election day experience, there is no excuse. If you really believe in no justice, no peace, and you could find the time to black out your Instagram page this week, then you should be able to find the time to cast a ballot and actually make that change a reality. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching for those that do on TV. Thank you for watching for those of you that watched our Fox 11 coverage this week. It's been an incredible week, one I will never forget. Please follow me in social media at Alex Michelson. Let me know your thoughts. And it's been so much fun to interact with so many different viewers this week as we've experienced this history together. I hope things calm down a bit. I hope everybody has a safe weekend or a safe week. And we'll see you next time for The Issue Is.